You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
What's happening to baseball? Over the past decades, its glow has been somewhat dimmed by a wide range of problems like labor strife and betting and steroid scandals. And that's inspired former All-Star player and Hall of Fame inductee Dave Winfield to examine the state of modern baseball in his book, Dropping the Ball, Baseball's Troubles and How We Can and Must Solve Them. It's published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased it has brought Dave Winfield to my show today. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard. Glad to be here.
Now, as I understand it, you are the only athlete ever drafted by teams in Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA, and yet you chose baseball over the others.
Exactly. I remain the only guy that's done that. When I grew up in the 50s in Minnesota, and baseball was king. It was the primary sport in America. And I had good coaches and a playground right down the block, and I learned to love it from there.
And for African Americans, it was the game of Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. What's happened? Why are most African American athletes choosing basketball and football over baseball these days?
There's not one simple cursory answer. It's a lot of things have gone on. Society has changed. There are a lot more options for people to do. They play football, basketball. Who used to golf? Who played tennis? There was no rollerblading. They didn't play soccer in America. Oh, God forbid, you know, but times have changed, and there are many options for people. The cities where it was many times a city game, the green spaces are scooped up by developers or they're unsafe. Kids no longer play outdoors anymore. Single-parent families instead of dual-parent families teaching the game, passing it on. Now that doesn't exist, so that's all part of dropping the ball.
Well, basketball also has a certain kind of a showbiz quality to it, and I'm sure that appeals to some kids. It's harder to do that in baseball, which really is a team sport, even though there are a few showboats, but the showboats are the guys who get in trouble.
Yeah, right. No trash talking in baseball. You know, someone's got a ball at 90 miles an hour. But as you say, other sports have come in and taken some of the mind share and the pocketbook share and the fancy of American kids. It, like any business, if you don't pay attention to the changing demographics and all of the other things that are going on, you might lose touch for a moment.
Well, are there no Little League teams available to kids in the inner city?
There are, but baseball has remained pretty steady. There's about 2.5 million kids that still play Little League. It isn't growing, it isn't shrinking there, but baseball isn't as readily available where you had the parks and rec departments supplying the sport. Now they say, whoa, you know, it costs money to maintain baseball fields. Let's give it to perhaps soccer, who gives us money. Let's tear down the fences and let the kids run, you know, do their thing. So there's a lot of dynamics going on, but the sport isn't everywhere. I kind of likened it to baseball was like the ocean when I was growing up. It was everywhere. And now it's more like major lakes and streams. There's some connection. Some are all off to themselves. But it's not everywhere.
So if you were growing up in Minnesota today, I guess Minneapolis?
St. Paul I grew up, but I went to
same
school.
Same thing, isn't
university.
It?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Well, if you were growing up in St. Paul today, mm-hmm. would you find it harder to play baseball as a kid? Or would you have just as much access to playing fields?
I would say it's funny you say St. Paul, Minnesota. It's funny. They're number one parks and rec department in the entire nation. They make sure they maintain their fields. They have good parks and rec, and all kinds of sports are offered. They have outdoor spaces, clean, safe, unlike most places around the country. So,
well, are there a lot of stars coming out of Minneapolis, St. Paul? You're probably the most famous player I can think of who's come from the area.
There have been people, baseball players like Jack Morris and Kent Herbeck and
good players.
Jerry Kuzman years ago. He was from from Minnesota. And, I mean, there are quite a few guys that make the major leagues. In fact, the MVP of baseball last year was right there from St. Paul. Why is his name eluding him? The catcher for the Minnesota.
Joe Mauer.
Exactly. Another St. Paul product.
Well, so the opportunities are there, but we're seeing more of the young American-born players coming from affluent communities and families.
Yeah, and the reason this happens, Leonard, and I point out in the book, is really that baseball, where it was free to everybody, and you could grow up and playground, and they teach you, and the parents knew how to parent, and coaches knew how to coach. And one day a scout may look at you, or you get an opportunity to go to school, as I did. That doesn't exist. If you wait for that to happen, you may be sorely disappointed, because the kids now, there are travel teams, club leagues, clinics, camps, specialized sports training at young ages. Kids are specified to play a certain sport. Remember in old Russia, they used to say, you're going to be a gymnast, or you're telling kids this at a young age now. And this is bad in America. You push them into one sport, the kid thinks he's going to grow, be tall, be strong, be fast, and he grows up and he's 15 and he wasn't very good in that sport, and it's too late to play something else. And you say, you know what, I messed up.
Someone like Cal Ripken also suggests that parents are concerned that there's just too much competitiveness, and in Little League, kids are suddenly put under all sorts of pressure that they don't want to see them go through. And you don't see the same thing in other sports. If a kid screws up in basketball, nobody is, he's not going to be taken off the team in the same way.
Right. Well,
it's a much looser, more casual thing, kids playing basketball at an early age.
No, if parents look at it, they really even get very competitive. Even basketball, they have these AAU teams, and if you're not good by 10, 11, 12, this is in baseball, basketball, football, you may get shunted to the sidelines. And that's why a lot of kids are finding even alternative sports are exciting, because they say, I don't like all this training. I don't like someone telling me what to do. I like to be creative. I'm my own man. I want to go play doing a skateboard or do a half pipe or whatever. And you say, what? 20 years ago, who did that? But what? Now they do.
And you said that sarcastically, so obviously you don't think that's
no. Well, you
that's
know,
the best attitude.
No, it's no. I'm saying.
What about your own kids? Did you hear that sort of thing from your own kids?
No, I'm. You know, and when I say it, Leonard, it wasn't sarcastic from the standpoint. It's that kids that I hear nowadays that love extreme sports and stuff. Would we have thought about getting on a board with roller skates on the bottom and going off the building, you know, onto a pipe?
No way.
All right.
Give me that bat. Dave Winfield has written, with the help of Michael Levin, Dropping the Ball, Baseball's Troubles and How We Can and Must Solve Them. It is published by Scribner. Well, you write a lot about the changing attitudes towards the game, especially among African Americans. Why do you think it matters so much?
Baseball meant so much to me. It's kind of molded and shaped who I am, how I feel, how I think about family, life, business, partnerships, culture, community, life lessons I learned. I mean, I don't remember all my teachers. I remember all my coaches, and I remember them from baseball. I played the other sports. I love them. They taught me lessons. But baseball, I had a 22-year professional baseball career. I got 4 great years of college and experience and travel and education, and it meant so much to me, so I'm kind of passing it on. I've been about 5 years in management in San Diego, board of directors, working with people, and some of the things that I've created on a local level, incubated, I've kind of taken them to the top of baseball and say, perhaps we can do this at the top. I've kept my relationships with the Players Association and the players and say, players, let's try to do some of these things. And I'm a guy that can walk the line between different groups and try to offer them suggestions in a constructive way. And you have to walk a line, because people say, well, you know, I don't want anybody telling me in detail and outline and, you know, point by point what we should do. I do what I want when I want. But certain changes could be effective and important to preserve and grow and protect this game that means so much to so many people. Look, the other sports are important. That's fun. It's great. You can get education. It can mean many things to you in your life. I'm saying, just don't give up on baseball. And people should know it is not dead. It's alive and well.
Well, the fans are still there, and they still care.
They
do.
But
it's interesting that the hot players these days are mostly from Latin America and specifically from the Dominican Republic. And now we're starting to see an influx of Japanese players who are getting a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. So are we just going through cycles?
No, this is more than a cycle. This is becoming a trend. It's not a bad thing because it's not – baseball is open and welcome people from all around the world. And we're going to continue to expand. We're looking at China. You're looking at Africa. We're looking at a lot of places. But if people – know why these changes are coming about. In fact, I address it in a chapter in the book. I said the new color line. If people understood that the changes, even in the minor league, what you see at the major league level, African Americans went from Jackie Robinson, number one, 28% in 1975. 20 plus years later, you're down to 8%. If you continue to follow that trend, in 10 years, I point out, there'll be one guy left, one African American. And then how do you reverse it? How do you reverse if you had 11% of your fans 7 years ago, African-American, out of now we're up to 76 million fans? That's a lot of business.
It seems to me that sports in general are a way of getting out of poverty. We've seen mm-hmm. that with all groups that are disadvantaged. Boxing was an entry area. Baseball definitely was. Now that's less so for African Americans, and you see Latin Americans who are being recruited at very young ages, and I must say, in many cases, just from reading the newspapers, at relatively low prices. Well, there's a bargain sale in the Dominican Republic, although some of these guys go on to make a heck of a lot of money later.
Let me comment on that, and you're absolutely correct. There's look, years ago, like you said, boxers, whether they were Irish or Jewish, and they came in the Negro League players, they came through the door with a vengeance. I got an opportunity. Think of it. People in other countries, the average salary in the Dominican, I think, is $1,800 a year. You know, you've got very few options for a really fruitful, productive life. So they quit. Put it this way. They have the opportunity of a life that they may struggle or absolute greatness in terms of how people view you and what you earn. They're coming through with a vengeance. The opportunity is there. They have one city, I think San Pedro de Macorís, down there with maybe 100,000 people. They've had 60, at least, Major League Baseball players come to the big. They believe that they can play. And Americans, I'll just say this, Leonard, we have options, we're comfortable, you know. And, you know, we're not going as hard at it. And the other people are saying, I'll take it. If you don't want it, I'll take it.
They also must be given good training because nobody is – well, there are some natural athletes, but in that kind of numbers, we're really talking about kids who are driven to succeed and also are being taught well when they're young.
Yeah, and they do have academies there. They're getting better. They were, you know, questionable in terms of how – You dealt with the players coming up and cultural assimilation and how long their way from home. But now that's so much better. Padres are building an $8 million facility down there, be state of the art, and they want to find players. But as you pointed out, you can get 20 players there and under different rules and circumstances than a first-round draft pick here in America. It's outsourcing. What are you going to do? 1 out of 9 drafted makes it. Are you going to risk that, you know, on your bonus babies or put a net over a lot of people and find 2 or 3 in there for a better price?
Dealing with buscones.
Exactly. The intermediaries between the players and their families in Major League Baseball. They say, I'll get you an opportunity. Let me represent you. And historically, some of these buscones have taken advantage of some of the players down there. They're trying to clean that up. But there are instances where the players and their families really had been taken advantage of, and nobody wants to hear that. And I do address that in the book as well.
Well, I would think the Padres have an advantage because you're the only team with a Spanish name.
Yeah, but we can still do better. I don't think we have a guy from the – oh, I got you. I got you.
Dave Winfield is here. His book, Dropping the Ball, written with the help of Michael Levin, Baseball's Troubles and How We Can and Must Solve Them. It is published by Scribner. We'll continue our conversation after this. Dave Winfield is here. He won a World Series ring with Toronto in 1992, came to the Yankees from the San Diego Padres, which is the team he now works at as an executive. He was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2001. And he's written a book with the help of Michael Levin called Dropping the Ball, Baseball's Troubles and How We Can and Must Solve Them. And it is published by Scribner. But, you know, I was thinking about your career. Here you were, very talented, as we said earlier, drafted in baseball, football, and in basketball. And you didn't spend any time in the minor leagues. So do you represent most athletes? I mean, most athletes, an awful lot of people spend years and years in the minors. And that can be a real grind. I could see why a kid who's faced with coming out of college in his sophomore year and trying to make it in the NBA would choose that rather than 4 or 5 years in the minors with hoping that he'll be sent up to the big team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's the simple way of saying this. I mean, I was blessed with a lot of God-given ability, but I worked very hard at my craft, and I loved what I did, so that's why sometimes things blossom. But being drafted in football, basketball, and baseball, Minnesota Vikings, I wouldn't have walked in here as upright as I did had I played football for so long.
You'd have a couple of bad knees.
Oh, basketball would have been a shortened career, but I would have been pretty good. And in baseball, I just loved it. Played 22 years, no regrets. So it's not common. There's less than a handful of people that have ever gone from amateur ranks right to major leagues and played. It took me some years to learn, 4 years to become an all-star. But I really asked questions and learned my craft and went from there. So I'm not the usual athlete. No one has duplicated those feats, but I was blessed.
Did you come into the game at a time when athletes, at least baseball players, were being paid decent salaries? Because there was a time.
No.
I don't know if you remember the story about Mickey Mantle, who batted, I think it was like 330 and got a raise. And the next year he batted 320 and they wanted him to take a cut in salary because he didn't have as good a year.
Well, these are the things I talk about now. When I tell the people listening, when in earshot, 1973, the minimum salary for a player was $15,000. The average salary was $35,000. The top was $150,000 or so. And then with Hank Aaron or Willie Mays, I said, I'm not going to be that. So you get a job in the off season. But I was a member of the Players Association, which continued to become the best, strongest union representation in the whole world, any sport, any industry. Guys make $300,000+ a year. They average $3 million, and there's $25 million. It's a great sport.
Well, free agency changed everything, but baseball entered it kicking and screaming.
Yeah, but free agency, arbitration, the era of television. But, you know, it used to be when I played, you know, they said, you got to hit it to get it, man. Every year you must perform or you don't get paid well. Cut your salary when they wanted to. It was different.
And you could also be traded.
Oh, easily.
On anybody's whim. What team did you come up with?
Came up with the San Diego Padres. And it's interesting. People don't know. I was a pitcher in college and an outfielder. And so I asked the Padres, what do you want me to play? They said, want you to play every day, so in the outfield. I had a lot to learn. I led the league in errors at one point. But that was being too overzealous and moving too quickly. I had to slow it down. But you learn your craft, you talk to people, and I entered the game with the right attitude, Leonard, like in any industry. You didn't become who you are by just, I'm Leonard Lopez, I'll do it my way. You sit back, you learn, and you talk to people, and that's what I did. I got under the arm, the tutelage of key people that played well and conducted themselves correctly, and they influenced me. Guys like Willie McCovey and I talked to a Joe Morgan, or I watched a Tony Perez, and there were people that just conducted themselves correctly, and that's who I emulated.
I've always wondered about being on a team with 25 others. There have got to be people you admire, and there have got to be people you don't want to spend a minute with.
Oh, yeah.
But you still got to work with them.
That's what baseball is all about, teamwork. But you meet the different cultures, different languages. I had to play one season. I only lasted a short time. I had to play in Mexico. When you play winter ball in 35 years ago in Ciudad Obregón, Mexico. I mean, hey, I love the people and everything, but I wasn't ready for it straight out of college. I said, oh, please, Lord, can I go home? And but you have to ply your trade in different places. I played in Alaska 2 summers in college. Great experience. But that's part of baseball.
What happens when you're traded and you after you've really made some kind of connection to the city you've been playing in?
Yeah. Between trades and free agency now, it's kind of affected the way people look at the game. They said, I don't know these guys. My team turned over 30%. I don't know. Who is this guy, number 12? And so that kind of affects the game. But I was pretty fortunate. I played in San Diego 8-plus years. I came to the Yankees, played almost 10. Then the other teams I went to, but I was usually a free agent, so I kind of chose my path. No one ever said, hey, you're traded. It never happened.
Many people have cited the high salaries, free agency, the fact that you don't know who's going to be on your team mm-hmm. each year, the strikes with a certain amount of fan disaffection.
Yeah.
Do you think it's true?
Oh, it's true. There's a lot of things that have happened. In fact, I write in the book that these are things why people look at the game differently. And they say, I like the game, but it's not like it used to be. The players might not be as close to us. I can't identify with my team as much anymore. My gosh, Pete Rose and gambling and lockouts and missing a World Series and steroids and our top players aren't really reacting to us. You know, how can I pull for this guy who doesn't want to be friendly, you know, or these guys? So you see a variety of issues out there, and I talk about them, but I said, this is how we can get past them. This is how we can hurdle them.
Well, how responsible are the team owners? For example, there has been a certain amount of revenue sharing in baseball with teams like Pittsburgh mm-hmm. getting a lot of money because they're in a small market, and then not really using it to get the players they're supposed to be going after because they're getting this money that's being taken from teams like the Yankees who go over the acceptable budget that yeah. baseball has set for them.
Yeah, it's different for every team. You know, it's 30 owners who manage their affairs all completely different. There's some corporate influence, there's some individual team owner influence. And some invest more. Some invest to win, some invest to make money, and even some of these suggested alterations or modifications or reformations in this game that I'm suggesting, some might say, we're making money. Why make changes? We broke attendance records. You know, I get my revenue share, and I'm cool. I don't have to. So I walk a fine line by just saying, someone says, well, why would you bring something up? Why would you suggest you make some changes? Because I love the game and I know we need it, but it's kind of like someone could tell General Motors, hey, keep your finger on the pulse. You know, years ago, you're not making cars like that are acceptable to the public, and they may not have paid attention. They look around, they drop the ball, and all of a sudden, we got to discuss bankruptcy in a closed room, or we have to discuss mergers, which we never would have considered. And how, my God, we created the car, and now look at this. Someone else controls our industry in our country. So baseball, you know, we're a business as well. Think about it.
Dave Winfield is my guest. He's written Dropping the Ball, Baseball's Troubles and How We Can and Must Solve Them, published by Scribner. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, some people also see the insistence of some teams on getting new stadiums paid for by the taxpayers as creating a problem and then blackmailing them if they don't if they don't give them the new stadium.
And
they're going to move yes. going to move somewhere else.
I got you.
So there's a sense that in many cases the team isn't loyal, or we have a situation like the Marlins, which where the fans support the team, it does well, mm-hmm. and then they sell off all the players.
Well, you know, Leonard, various locales, it works differently. San Diego was able to work out an agreement to build a beautiful new ballpark 3 years ago. It's a partnership with the city. It voids, you know, every deal is different. You know, Minnesota, my hometown, they're trying to build a new ballpark there, and they thought they had it, and now it's eluding them. They say, oh my gosh, we have to find another site. We're not dipping into more taxes. Every city is different. But no one would deny, San Diego would probably be the, how would you say, the model of excellence in terms of a ballpark being placed in the middle of a community and it being spurring the entire restoration and rebuilding of the economy downtown.
We saw that in Baltimore as well.
Yeah, Baltimore's done all right. They've done all right in San Diego, but if you look at it, they've probably spurred $2 billion worth of development. And everybody that was against it and through the lawsuits that held it up for over a year and cost the ball club millions, now they say, where are they? They're nowhere to be found.
In 1981, George Steinbrenner signed you with the largest contract up to that point, $23 million over 10 years, was it?
Yeah, something like that.
And you must think about Alex Rodriguez's problems when you think back to that time. Fans resent players who make a lot of money and then don't produce on the level that they think that money is worth, even though I suspect A-Rod, when we look at his total career, is going to be a good candidate for the Hall of Fame.
No, absolutely. I mean, he's arguably the best player in the game, but he's been in New York. They expect results.
Did you feel more pressure when you were with the Yankees?
Yeah, everyone does. But I was up for it. I mean, there were times they got on me if I didn't perform. But Alex is a uniquely tough situation. You know, the highest paid player by far in the game, and you come here and people expect a lot, not only to win, get your uniform dirty, interact with the public, communicate with the fans. There were some high standards or expectations for him. And although he's fallen short at this moment, he said, I'm going to stick with it and try to overcome it. But I'll tell you, whether he made a nickel or $100,000 or $25 million, to stick it out, you give someone credit. We'll see what happens. It's going to be difficult because it's almost too tough to win over every fan. So every at bat, every day, every week, every month, every year, even your home fans may not be on your side. That's difficult.
Well, maybe he can take a leaf from your book and kill a seagull with a ball. You're the only athlete who ever did that as well.
Yeah. Well, that was an accident. after that game in 1983. Now, in New York, if I hit a bird on the field, I threw it over the fence. I said, let's go with the game. But in Toronto, someone called the police, the mounted police. After the game, they came there and they arrested me, took me down to the station. The ball club, we're leaving town. They're on the tarmac waiting in Hamilton, Ontario, while I'm being interviewed downtown with Exhibit A on the table with his feet sticking up in the air. And when I got there about 2.5 hours later, boy, Billy Martin and the guys, boy, they got all over me. Billy said, the first time this guy hit the cutoff man all season.
The cutoff bird.
Oh, man. But it was something. But I've had a great career in the game.
Well, some players sign baseballs, they sign autograph cards, and others really don't want to do anything to ingratiate themselves with the fans. Do you have sympathy for the people who just want to be left alone?
To a degree, but understand, as a professional athlete, whether you have an obligation to give anything back, it is in your best interest to interact with the fans and the community and the team in a way. If you want your career to move in the correct direction, you're just better off doing. I would advise, consult, suggest to any player to do those kind of things, because I see all the time guys on different teams, they could be making $6, $8, $10 million a year. If you don't look at the fans, you don't talk to the kids, you don't flip them a ball, you don't do any give back to the community, it gets around. It gets around, whether you're a good guy or a bad guy.
You think Barry Bonds would have an easier time if he was nicer in that way, because everybody now sees him as someone who's vulnerable with the whole steroid scandal, although somebody pointed out that you could take all the steroids in the world, but that doesn't help you hit the curveball.
Yeah, but those are people who aren't athletes. When you're an athlete and you know what you're doing and you use a performance-enhancing drug, you can improve your performance.
But you can hit more home runs.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. I mean, a guy sitting on the couch eating the potato chips right now, he's not going to be able to hit a curveball or a fastball over the fence. It doesn't do that. You got to be an athlete anyway. I don't know. I couldn't tell you because I never use these things. A Barry Bonds or anybody else, there are guys I played with that sometimes I'm not talking to the media. It distracts me. They bother me. They're in my business. And he's not going to change. And some of the guys that are leaders in our performance, you would wish they had chosen a different path. It would do the game better. Their life would be easier, but they may think, they would have got in my business, you affect my performance, leave me alone.
In the beginning of your book, you sketch out what you would like baseball to be like in 2012. That's not all that many years ago from now. And then we have very little time, but can you give us some of the suggestions you have?
Wow. I have a whole list ranging from, man. The first thing is something that you won't see openly, but you'd see the end result. There has to be a better relationship between Major League Baseball and the Players Association and the players, not just on collective bargaining, but issues that affect the public, that trickle down. So there's some top-down programming that can be done, campaigns reaching back and out that will rectify some of the issues, perception and reality issues. Then there are issues dealing with African Americans in the game. Ooh, there's a half a dozen things, but the academy, some things are doing are good, such as the academy, new baseball academy in the United States. Let's succeed, replicate that around the country. There have to be better role models, mentors, and ambassadors, people that have played the game, so there is that connection. NBA does very well. There are some models of excellence to learn from in that respect. Just educating the public in different towns and cities where to go to play baseball. The Minnesota Twins, for instance, all the money they raise goes into baseball-related programs in their foundation. I'm not telling people not to deal with cancer or scholarships, but that's not promoting your own game. You better protect your territory, your terrain. But they have a thing called Play Ball Minnesota. And there's a connection. You can go online and find out where any team and organization and youth group, where there is the sport being played. Most people couldn't tell you. Let's replicate those things around. So I could go on and on, but essentially there's some things, good things going on. MLB is doing some great things. Players Association is doing some great things. But if we tell you, you said, you know what the players are doing with the Players Trust? Have you ever heard of the Players Trust?
No.
You shake your head, no. And so obviously you don't know what they're doing. And they're saying privately, man, I wish we could get out the good work we're doing. You can't do it by yourself. MLB, they're trying to accomplish some things. But they say, you know what? Man, we need the cachet of the players and their involvement, and then we'll make progress. Those are just, we're touching the tip of the iceberg, Leonard.
But I know, everybody I know just can't wait for the baseball season to start again.
Yeah,
so that's the other side. And I want to thank you so much for being with us, Hall of Famer Dave Winfield. His book, Dropping the Ball, Baseball's Troubles and How We Can and Must Solve Them, is published by Scribner, written with the help of Mike Levin. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great.